Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies, I tell stories, I share those epic fails I've made along the way, I interview experts, and all because I believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And if you're new to this podcast, we talk about all kinds of aspects of creativity. We talk about the creative process. We talk about project-based learning. We talk about using technology wisely for creative work. We talk about what it means in an unpredictable world to thrive and to be deeply human as a student. And so today we're gonna be talking about project-based learning, and I'll get into that in a second. But I do want to say this. If you are new to this podcast, please check out my blog. It is spencereducation.com. You'll find a link there at the bottom that sends you straight to the newsletter. You'll be signed up for my newsletter, where I send out a weekly newsletter with my articles, podcasts, and free resources on a regular basis. Also, if you want to follow me for shorter snippets on social media, I am on LinkedIn. You can find me at Spencer Education on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok as well. So go check those things out. That would be awesome. And we can connect in smaller ways as well. So without further ado, let's dive into this topic today about PBL. And it's sort of a surprising topic. It's the opposite of what you might expect. It's answering the question, when should we not use project-based? To my core, I believe in the power of project-based learning to help students learn and retain the content at a deeper level, while also helping them develop the skills that they'll need as they navigate a complicated and uncertain world. So what happens with PBL is it is applied learning that allows for deeper retention of information, deeper mastery, better problem solving. In other words, all of those things that we think of when it comes to deeper learning. At the same time, they develop these critical thinking skills, creativity skills that will help them in the future, especially in a world of generative AI. These are the distinctly human elements that machines simply can't replace. But today I want to explore the question, when should we not have students do PBL? I actually think there are times when the standards don't align with the PBL framework. In other words, I don't believe that everyone should be using project-based learning at all times. And so I want to start with a quick story about why PBL isn't always the best idea. How do we get our middle school math teachers to embrace project-based learning? A principal asks me. Have you asked them about it? He nods. They say that PBL doesn't work in math. I disagree. I taught AP stats for years. We did PBL on a regular basis. They mentioned the time crunch in the test. Well, we had limited time and a high-stakes AP test, but we still did it. What standards are they doing? I ask. I mean, it's kind of all over the place, but I think they could be clustered together to do meaningful projects instead of just constant direct instruction and worksheets and tests. I take a look at the curriculum map and suddenly I'm empathetic toward this principal. And at the same time, the middle grades math team. The time crunch is real. You have this massive set of standards that students are supposed to master in a single year. Unlike high school statistics, these range from algebra to geometry to stats. Some are very skill-based and procedural, others are more conceptual. Some of these require lots of explicit instruction and a strong set of prerequisite skills, and others allow for more discovery and, I would say, open inquiry. I'm struck in this moment by the fact that I would only do one or two PBL units if I were given this curriculum map. I could easily imagine a project-based statistics probability project and maybe a blended PBL based on proportional reasoning, volume, and surface area. At the same time, many of these standards require a systematic approach with clear, explicit instruction, where each skill builds on the next in complexity. And in these moments, I wouldn't embrace PBL at all. Instead, I would create meaningful, context-based word problems or even short design challenges. Then, only after they have built deeper background knowledge, I would incorporate more inquiry or discovery. For me, this is a reminder that PBL isn't always the best instructional model. There are times when project-based learning might actually backfire. And I learned this the hard way when I was an eighth grade teacher. So I want to talk about the myth of what I call always PBL. So early on in my PBL journey, I attended some conferences and visited some high schools where they were promoting what I would describe as like this always PBL approach. We are a PBL school, one teacher said. One speaker mentioned the notion that authentic learning means we learn through projects rather than simply doing a project afterwards. And although I was skeptical of this approach, and I never completely bought into it, I found myself trying to do project-based learning as much as possible. And I felt like if I wasn't doing PBL, then it wasn't real, okay? But then I had this conversation with a student. Here's how it went. Hey, Spencer. Notice it's middle school, so like they don't say Mr. Spencer. They say Spencer, right? So I was always Spencer. Hey, Spencer. Can I ask you something? Miguel said as he walked into the classroom. Go on, I answered. Okay, I'm not trying to be mean. I just want to know something. Why can't we just read right now? What do you mean, I asked. I mean, I don't mind doing research. I liked our Geek Out blogs. I like writing. But I don't know. I missed the silent reading we were doing. Yeah. You replace reading with work, Liliana chimed in. Okay, but this is reading. I mean, but we aren't reading, she pointed out. We're talking. We're making things. We're discussing. That's fine. I just miss reading. I love the projects we do in science and social studies. And I know that these book reviews are necessary. I wish I could be reading a book instead. Thanks for the feedback. I'll consider that, I said. To be honest, I wasn't all that grateful for the feedback. I was actually kind of defensive in the moment. I mean, I had spent a long time planning this project, and I thought the kids would be excited about it. But the truth is, she had a point. Or rather, they had a point. As students streamed in, I began a short mini lesson on video editing. It was a solid lesson on video editing. And to an outside observer, it would have been a lesson with peak student engagement. But when I finished, I had this lingering question. Was I actually doing a reading lesson? Were students actually engaged in the standards that were listed on my lesson plan? Yes, they were doing video previews of books that they had read. But they were focused on video composition. Not necessarily the literary review standards. At the end of the day, I made a key decision. This didn't need to be a PBL unit. Instead, we could take 2 to 3 class periods and do a short mini project. The videos might not be perfectly edited, but that's okay. We might not have the ultimate authentic audience, but again, that is okay. We would make videos and launch them to the library with QR codes so that students could watch the videos. Honestly, I felt guilty about putting academic standards above the so-called gold standard PBL I had learned in training. But I now realize this was the right decision. So with that in mind, I want to share 3 times when PBL is actually not a very good idea. Number 1, don't implement PBL when students lack foundational skills or knowledge. One of the core tenets of PBL is that students learn the content through the projects rather than doing a project to demonstrate their knowledge. I've used the metaphor of a plate. It's not about adding a bonus project on top of a crowded plate so much as it is rearranging the plate. And yet, this is only true if students can access prior knowledge. We sometimes assume students will simply pick up the foundational knowledge along the way while they work on a project. And occasionally that happens. But often students end up overwhelmed, confused, or dependent on the strongest member of their group, and they don't actually learn what they need to learn. If a student has a very basic, cursory knowledge of the content, they'll end up engaging in a project that is, well, kind of shallow. If this is about conceptual knowledge, the civil rights movement, World War II, animal adaptations, you get the idea. They might reinforce misconceptions or simply create something that doesn't delve deeply into the concepts. If the issue is skill-based, they'll end up struggling the entire time because they haven't mastered the prerequisite skills needed for a project. Project-based learning works best when students have enough background knowledge and enough core skills to think deeply about the content. They can't make connections if there's nothing to connect it to. They can't solve problems if they lack the skills or the conceptual framework for the content they're engaged in. And otherwise, what I'm trying to say is the project can become guesswork with a polished final product, but the learning is completely absent. And this is especially true when students are learning complex concepts or technical skills for the first time. If students are still struggling with basic math operations, a giant engineering design challenge may create so much frustration rather than empowerment, and they internalize the idea that maybe engineering isn't for them, or maybe they're bad at math. If students lack reading fluency, a large inquiry project can quickly turn into surface-level research and copied information, but no actual reading. Sometimes students need direct instruction. They need guided practice. They need modeling, repetition, smaller learning experiences. All of those things are sometimes needed to build up into larger open-ended projects. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, strong PBL often depends on those foundational building blocks. In other words, you can't build anything if you don't have the building blocks to begin with. It's like trying to do a Lego creation and then having to figure out for the first time ever how to mold your own Lego bricks. If you don't have Legos, you're not going to build anything. And I think of this as this is where I think the distinction between PBL or traditional practice is a little unfair. This is not saying that PBL is bad and traditional practices are good. What I'm saying here is that sequencing matters. Sometimes students need more workshops before a project. Sometimes they need mini lessons during a project. Sometimes they need smaller structured challenges before tackling something more complex. The best PBL teachers I know are the ones who are able to determine when to open things up and when to provide tighter scaffolds. The goal is not maximum freedom at all times. The goal is deeper learning. And deeper learning still requires students to build knowledge, practice skills, and develop confidence along the way. At the same time, there's a danger in always saying this group can't do projects because they haven't mastered blank first. I find it tragic when I see special education students, for example, who have never had any access to PBL. So I think it's important that we make sure to craft projects that allow students to practice new skills in a way that taps into their current prior knowledge. For example, you might do a geek out project. Here they craft blog posts about any topic they want, and it could be Minecraft, sports, music, food, you get the idea. They engage in research, they craft persuasive writing, informational text, listicles, all kinds of different options. And you set tight parameters around their writing, but they get to choose the topic. And what you're doing is you're starting from this strength-based perspective. They know the content, which is whatever they've chosen, but what they're practicing is the skill of research and writing. Another option is to start off small with mini projects and sprints. Students might do a 3-day rapid prototyping design challenge. They might complete Wonder Day projects in a single class period. You might have them solve a problem using what they've learned in the last 2 weeks, but not actually share it with a larger audience. And I realize that this approach isn't real PBL, but honestly, the goal isn't real PBL. The goal is helping students master the content at a deep level while developing the type of competencies they'll use for a lifetime. Number two, don't implement PBL when the goal is precision and fluency. I want to do PBL in language arts, but we have a tight curriculum map, a teacher tells me. Oh, it's not just a map, it's a script, another teacher says. Can you share it with me? I ask. They show me some samples, and I'm immediately struck by how precise it is. Everything is sequential and systematic. And it feels high stakes if students fail to learn a particular phoneme or blend. This entire curriculum has been built intentionally on the science of reading. I used to rail against scripted curriculum, by the way. I used to say, why are they asking chefs to use Hamburger Helper? But when I taught reading intervention, I would do a phonics screener, a grammar screener, and I would look at things like reading endurance and reading strategy. And I still, to my core, believe that there's a craft to teaching that blends together the science with the art of teaching. But I also see this, the need for precise, systematic approaches to phonics. I wouldn't change any of it, I explain. I think this approach to phonics and blending actually works really well. Students need precision here with instant feedback. A phonics-based project would backfire. Sometimes students need repetition and tight feedback. This is true in learning phonics, but also in something like linear equations. Other times, the issue isn't simply repetition and feedback. Instead, it's about uninterrupted practice. If you teach PE, you might not need a project. Kids simply need to play the game. They need to lift weights in weight training and in a fitness class. Similarly, they need to build reading endurance by simply reading for longer stretches of time. So if students are mastering a standard built on skill practice, precision, and systematic knowledge, PBL might not be the best instructional model. Instead, we can have students practice some of these skills in an authentic context while they do a PBL that centers on more conceptual knowledge in the future. Here we can use PBL as a way to reinforce these skills, but not replace the teaching of these skills. And then finally, number three, don't implement PBL when the task isn't authentically complex. I've had times when I tried to force PBL into places where it simply didn't belong. I remember trying to figure out if the Pythagorean theorem could be a PBL unit. Short answer, it can't. Or rather, it shouldn't. But early in my PBL journey, I attempted to turn certain standards into units and wound up just wasting time and frustrating my students. Not every learning experience needs to become a full project-based learning unit. If it lacks authentic complexity, PBL can actually make learning feel more artificial rather than meaningful. A worksheet turned into a poster board, it's basically still a worksheet with just a lot of extra craft built into it. It just has a little more pizzazz. And hey, I love pizzazz, but that's not deeper knowledge. Seriously, I love glitter. Students recognize these forced projects immediately. They know the difference between solving real problems and completing dressed-up activities pretending to be projects. Jennifer Gonzalez, a good friend of mine who has a great podcast called Cult of Pedagogy, describes these projects as Gresham Urns, where students do a craft instead of an actual project that leads to deeper learning. In this case, it would be Greece. At its best, PBL involves sustained inquiry and decision-making and revision and creativity. Students wrestle with ambiguity. They evaluate multiple solutions. They deal with constraints and trade-offs and unexpected challenges. In other words, it's all about deep mastery. But if the standard doesn't require that, then it's actually failing. So where do we go from here? I think a better lens would say, let's match the method to the purpose. After doing my first three PBL units as an eighth grade teacher, I noticed significant growth in my students. They understood social studies at a much deeper level and were more engaged in the content. I watched as they developed essential, durable skills like collaboration and critical thinking, and I became a PBL evangelist. But the danger in evangelist is that you focus on the good news of an idea or strategy, and you forget that it doesn't always work all the time. I tried to transform my class into this full-blown PBL social studies class. I visited schools and saw the gold standard way of doing things, and I went to conferences. But then I soon realized that sometimes forcing PBL into every situation just, it doesn't work. It backfires. Authentic learning doesn't always require a massive project. Authenticity is simply whatever is real to the student in the moment. It's about connecting the task and the strategies we use. If the connection is real, that's authenticity. So instead of asking, when should I use PBL? I think we should start with the question, what does this learning require? Sometimes PBL is perfect. Sometimes all you need is a short inquiry-based activity. Other times we need a simulation or a game. Still other times we just need skill practice and direct instruction and immediate feedback. A worksheet isn't artificial if you're practicing a skill. A test doesn't lack authenticity. A lecture isn't inherently disengaging. None of these strategies are bad. Now, I want to point out, it's true that students are more likely to remember those big epic projects rather than those repetitive lessons on phonics. But you know what else they remember? Phonics, blending. And they apply those skills all the time with automaticity every time they read. And you know what? I'd say that's pretty authentic. To be clear, I still believe in the power of PBL. However, I also believe in the power of explicit instruction and guided practice and peer discourse and debates and long extended period of time of problem solving and reading. All of these strategies are authentic if we use them in the right context. Ultimately, the goal of PBL is not to master project-based learning. It's about deeper learning. When students engage in authentic PBL, they learn the content at a deep level while gaining the skills that they'll need to navigate a complex world. Sometimes that involves PBL. Sometimes it doesn't. But the goal is to help them develop what they will need in life to have that depth advantage that they'll need in an unpredictable world. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy it, will you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify or wherever it is that you get your podcast? Also, recommend to a friend. That's one of the best ways, word of mouth. And subscribe if you have not hit the subscribe button. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something amazing.